He gave a sign, and another view screen appeared. Beatrice's head and shoulders filled the screen, her white cowl surrounding her tired face like a halo. There were dark smudges under her eyes, and when she spoke, her voice was ragged with exhaustion.
I'll keep this short. We're up to our lower lip in work and sinking fast. The war has left half the planets in the Empire existing at barely subsistence level. Only Beckett's food ships are holding off mass starvation. Social, political, and business structures have collapsed everywhere, and in the resultant chaos, people are dying from lack of food, shelter, and medical supplies. The Church is overseeing relief work wherever it can, but our funds and our people are limited. Parliament must make more resources available to us, or whole populations will revert to barbarism or worse. Millions are dying. Millions more will die if something isn't done soon. The Church's work these days is wholly concerned with charity. You have my personal assurance that all monies voted to us will go directly to ease the suffering of the needy. The old days of corruption and militarism are gone. Help us, please. Help us to help those who need us.
There was a certain amount of uncomfortable stirring. Golgotha had taken its wounds during the rebellion, but in the end had come through largely unscathed. On a world still rich, it was easy to forget that many others had not been so lucky. Elias Gutman leaned forward in his chair.
We will, of course, take Her Holiness's request under advisement. Though, once again, I must point out that there are many calls on Parliament's limited means. We will consider the matter further in this House once the appropriate committee has made its report. But now we have one last piece of business to discuss. Something that I think practically everyone here can agree on is our need for an official head of state. Someone to represent the government personally to the people. After much discussion on many committees, it has been decided that we should appoint a constitutional monarch.
There was immediate uproar. Everyone wanted to speak at once, and no one was willing to back down. Gutman tried to wave them all to silence, but for once was completely ignored. Sitting back in his chair, he let them get on with it. Owen stood silently in the midst of the hubbub and thought about it. Even though he destroyed the Iron Throne, the crown still existed, and legally he supposed there was nothing to prevent Parliament from appointing a new emperor if they were stupid enough to do so. He felt very tired. He'd been through so much to overthrow Lionstone, but more and more he was beginning to wonder if all his efforts had been for nothing. Finally, the noise died down, and Gutman was able to make himself heard again.
Nothing will be decided without this House's full approval. We are suggesting a purely constitutional monarch, with no actual power or legal authority. A figurehead whose duties would be entirely public and social in nature. It would, of course, have to be someone that everyone could trust and support. The committees have come up with what I think you will all agree is the only suitable choice. Owen Deathstalker!
There was uproar all over again, and a great deal of more or less spontaneous applause, from those who approved of honoring such a great hero, to those who saw the advantages of removing the Deathstalker from the political process once and for all. Owen was shocked silent for a long moment, and then his voice rose above the general din, cutting it off immediately.
No way in hell am I wearing the crown! If I'd wanted to make myself emperor, I could have done so when I overthrew Lionstone. I didn't want the crown then, and I don't want it now.
Gutman smiled easily.
Most people here seem to think it's a good idea, and an honor you richly deserve. And who more suitable to be a constitutional monarch than a man who openly says he has no interest in power? Though we may have our differences, Sir Deathstalker, I do not hesitate to acknowledge all you have done to make this parliament possible. Your heroic exploits have restored democracy to us. Who better to represent it to the people? And think on this, Sir Deathstalker. If not you, who? A Campbell, perhaps? Or a Wolf? Or a Shrek? You are perhaps the only aristocrat who could approach the crown without an agenda. Come, Owen. You have always known your duty. Think about it. We'll get back to you.
Owen nodded stiffly, still scowling. Hazel looked at him, and her face showed nothing. Nothing at all. Then there was a new disturbance at the back of the crowd, and the people moved aside as two men pushed through, heading implacably for the open floor of the house. Everyone recognized Captain John Silence, but the dark and brooding figure at his side was a mystery. Once, Silence's companion would have been Investigator Frost, as attached to him as his shadow, but she died defending the Empire, struck down by that notorious traitor, Kit Summerisle. The new figure was, if anything, even more disturbing than Frost had been. He moved in silence, graceful as any predator, and people looked away, unable to meet his eyes. Then some recognized what the man in black was holding, and a shocked murmur rippled through the crowd. It was a power lance, a banned weapon from the old days of the Empire, banned because it could make an Esper so strong that no one could hope to stand against him. No one had seen an Esper bearing a power lance in centuries. It meant death just to own one. Captain Silence stood at the front of the crowd and nodded brusquely to the house. He was a tall man in his late 40s, with a thickening waistline and a receding hairline, and eyes that had seen far too much, but had never been able to look away. One of the few who'd fought for the Empire, still to emerge a genuine hero, he'd kept his head down since the great reorganizations began. There were many on both sides who would have liked to remove such a powerful figure from the game, but he was potentially too useful to be taken off the board just yet. Never knew when you might need someone for a last-ditch suicide run. And besides, the public did so love its heroes. The fleet kept Silence busy till the higher-ups decided what to do with him. And now, here he was, unannounced, unexpected. No one had ever seen him in Parliament before. The crowd went very quiet and waited for him to speak. Silence nodded curtly to Gutman.
Sorry to burst in, but this won't wait. I've just returned from the planet Unseelie, out on the rim. We're all in big trouble.
Oh, hell. Does nothing but bad news come from the rim these days?
What is it, Captain? The insect ships?
Worse. It's Shub.
Silence let the crowd and the MPs confer for a moment before continuing.
I was on a regular supply run to the single Imperial base on Unseelie, where scientists were studying a crashed alien ship of unknown origin. We dropped out of hyperspace to find that the whole planet had been destroyed. The metallic forests that covered the world from pole to pole, provider of the heavy metals that power our traditional star drives, have been completely harvested. Billions of trees, and everyone gone. The base is destroyed, blown apart, every man and woman dead. The alien ship is gone. Shub took it. The only living thing to survive the Shub attack was the man at my side. Once an investigator, now a traitor. Living alone on Unseelie as an outlaw. His name is Carrion. I brought him here to tell the story, with my personal guarantee of his safety. I trust this is acceptable?
Yes, yes, yes. We trust your judgment in this, as always. Tell us about the Shub attack. Why didn't the fleet detect it?
No one sees Shub if they don't want to be seen.
Tall and whipcord lean, the man wore dark leathers under a billowing black cape. He had a young face, deathly pale under long black hair, and cold dark eyes, proud and unyielding. He was like some grim crow, telling tales after the battle was over.
They came out of nowhere, thousands of ships like nightmares cast in metal, filling the skies. They flew untouched through the planet's violent storms and tore the forest up by the roots. They slapped aside the base's forescreen as though it wasn't there and smashed it flat. I heard the screams of the men and women as they died. Shub took the alien ship along with whatever scientist happened to be on board at the time. The attack was over almost as soon as it began. And then they began the harvesting. Once, there had lived among the metallic trees a wondrous alien race called the Ashrai. The Empire exterminated them so as to have uninterrupted access to the metal trees. But their souls survived tied to the trees. I heard them screaming as the gold and silver forest was ripped from the earth. I survived underground, protected by my psionic abilities. I am the only living survivor of Unseelie. The Ashrai are dead, the humans are dead, and the trees are gone. I am Carrion. I bring bad luck. I am the destroyer of nations and of worlds.
He stopped talking abruptly,
and the silence stretched on as everyone looked at each other, caught up in the spell of the dark man's words and the terrible news he brought. Finally, Gutman looked down at Carrion in silence.
We thank you for this intelligence. If Sharp has taken all of the trees, we can only assume that they must be planning a major assault on humanity. The heavy metals from the harvesting would fuel one hell of an armada, while at the same time denying them to us. And if they've got the alien ship, it won't be long before they have the secrets of the new star drive just as we do. Except that with the ship gone, our work on perfecting and better understanding the new drive becomes more urgent than ever. Thank you for bringing us this news, Captain Silence. As always, you serve us well. You may go now, but we'll need full reports from both of you.
Understood. We'll make ourselves available. One last thought for you to chew over. An Esper once told me he had a clairvoyant vision of what Shub had planned for humanity. He wouldn't tell me what he saw, but he killed himself rather than risk living to see it come true.
Parliament was a sea of whispers, rocked by too many shocks. Gutman leaned back in his chair, his voice carefully calm and reasonable.
Precognition is the least understood and the least reliable of the Esper abilities, Captain. Whatever vision your Esper may have had, I don't think we should put too much faith in it. We make our own future, and forewarned is forearmed. It's clear, though, that someone must investigate what Shub is up to.
Jack Random spoke up from the back.
I'll volunteer. If an attack's imminent, we need to know. And I'm one of the few people who could hope to get close to Shub's dealings and still come back alive to make a report.
Ah, hell. Guess I'll go along as well for the ride.
Your offer is welcomed. It only remains for me to thank Captain Silence and his companion for the timely news they brought. Go with Parliament's best wishes. No doubt you are eager to return to your ship. Carrion, you will of course have to turn the power lance over to the proper authorities before you can leave.
No, I don't think so. This lance is a part of me. You might as well ask me to give up an arm or a leg.
Power lances are banned, and with good reason. They are forbidden throughout the Empire. Silence's word gives you protection, outlaw, so we do not demand your death. But you cannot be permitted to keep the lance.
Gutman gestured with one fat hand, and a dozen armed guards stepped forward, their guns trained on the man called Carrion. He looked at Silence, who shrugged. Carrion smiled coldly at Gutman.
Try and take it.
The light seemed to darken suddenly throughout the house, and there were shadows everywhere. Things flitted about in the gloom, or hung threateningly out of sight overhead. Tangible presences moved among members in public, huge and cold and unseen. There were glimpses of jagged teeth and great curved claws. A heavy wind was blowing from nowhere, gusting and violent. Something howled, a long and savage sound with nothing human in it. More voices rose on every side. A malevolent rage could be felt hovering like a storm cloud that might fall on the assembly at any moment. Guards clutched their guns tightly, but didn't know where to point them. Owen and Hazel, Jack and Ruby stood back to back, ready for whatever came. People clutched at each other, trying to look in all directions at once. They were only moments from panicking and a stampede for the doors that would leave a lot of people dead, trampled underfoot. And then suddenly, the presences were gone. The wind dropped, and all was quiet and still again. Panic began to subside, people glancing fearfully about them. On his chair, on his raised dais, Gutman licked his lips nervously and cleared his throat. Everyone looked at him, but he was looking only at Carrion.
What? What was that?
The Ashrai. They died long ago, when Captain Silence gave the order to scorch Unseelie, but their ghosts live on. Once they haunted the metallic forests, but now the trees are gone, so they haunt me. They protect me.
Oh, hell. Keep the bloody lance. It's the least of our worries just now. Now get out of here and take your unnatural friends with you.
Carrion nodded calmly, turned, and headed for the doors, Silence at his side. People hurried to get out of their way, all except one. Diana Virtue stood in their path, and Carrion and Silence stopped before her. Diana nodded brusquely to Carrion, and then fixed her wounded eyes on Silence.
Hello, Father.
Hello, Diana. I heard you'd taken your old name back. I'm glad. I never really liked Jenny Psycho.
She was a real part of me. She still is, deep down. I've just moved on from her. I had to give her up because I found out the hard way that I wasn't who I thought I was. When the Mater Mundi worked her will through me, I thought I was her avatar, her focus, her saint on Earth. But she abandoned me, took away the grace and the glory, and left me to live out the rest of my days as a lesser being, no longer touched by heaven. Left me alone, just like you did, on Unseelie.
It wasn't like that.
Yes, it was. It was just like that.
She looked at Carrion.
I heard the Ashrai sing on Unseelie. Joined my voice with theirs. They gave me a glimpse of heaven, and then went away, leaving me back in the mud with the rest of humanity. Better to be blind forever than to see the colors of the rainbow for only a few moments before being thrown back into the dark again. I've been betrayed so many times. Now I trust only me. Whoever that is. I'm glad your planet is dead, Carrion. I'm glad the forests are gone. I just wish you and the Ashrai had disappeared with them. Stay away from me. You too, Father. I'll kill you if you hurt me again.
Silence tried to say something, but the words wouldn't come. And in the end, he just bowed to her and left, Carrion at his side. Diana watched them go, and for a moment, something of her old malevolent persona crackled about her like a halo of flies. After that, everything else was pretty much an anticlimax, and Parliament soon broke up. Owen and Hazel, Jack and Ruby, avoided the many people who wished to talk to them, and left through a side entrance to avoid the media and the crowds. They didn't feel like talking to strangers. There was a tavern nearby, and they went to ground there. It wasn't much to look at, no more than a hole in the wall, but the booze was drinkable, and privacy came guaranteed. The four of them sat around a stained and scarred tabletop, nursed their drinks, and wondered what to say to each other. They'd come a long way from the simple band of heroes Owen had put together back on Mistworld.
Been a long time since we last sat down together. But then, we've all been busy, I suppose.
Not really that surprising. I mean, all we ever really had in common was the rebellion.
There's still friendship. There's always friendship.
Of course. You can't go through everything we did without becoming close. But I know what Hazel means. The rebellion gave us a shared purpose, something to base our lives around. With that gone, we've had to reinvent ourselves. And we're no longer the people we used to be.
Right. How the hell did we get to here from there? I don't know what I expected to happen if we ever actually won. But this sure as hell isn't it. I miss the direction I used to have.
The certainties. I used to know who I was. I was the professional rebel. I fought the system. And now I'm a part of it.
We used to be outlaws with a price on our heads and everyone queuing up to take a shot at us. I sure as hell don't miss that.
But we can't go back to who we were, to the people we were before all this started. We had to change in order to survive. We can't go home again.
Wouldn't go back if I could. Hated it. Couldn't wait to get away. Get out into the Empire and start making trouble.
Right. Roots are overrated. And sometimes that means moving on. Die.
But we have to stay in touch. Who else can we talk to? Who else could hope to understand the things we've been through? The maze changed us on many levels. And I'm not convinced the changes are finished yet.
Don't start that again. It's over, Owen. Let it go. I won't live in the past. Sit in shitholes like this every evening, talking old battles and victories, arguing over who did what like old pensioned-off soldiers, with nothing left to do but relive the days when their lives had purpose and meaning. My life isn't over yet. I'm damned if it is.
Right. That's why I volunteered us for the Shub mission.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that's entirely what I had in mind.
Oh, come on. Where's your spirit of adventure? You said you wanted some action. So tomorrow we make our start.
So soon? Hazel and I only just got back. We've hardly had any time together.
Maybe it's for the best. We're becoming new people, moving apart, whether we want to or not. Strangers become friends, become strangers again. That's life.
They talked a while longer, but they'd already run out of things to say. Jack and Ruby left. Owen stared into his glass, while Hazel watched him.
There's something I have to tell you. I'm getting married.
Hazel's pulse jumped, but she kept her voice and face calm.
Oh yeah? Anyone I know?
Constance Wolfe. It's an arranged marriage.
I thought that kind of thing disappeared with the aristocracy.
They're not really gone, and some of the old ways are still valid.
It all seems very sudden.
Well, it took me by surprise. It was all Constance's idea. She had good reasons. I couldn't say no.
You always were easily talked into things. Do you love her?
No, I hardly know her. But then that's often the way with arranged marriages. I would have had to marry someone eventually, someone of my class. It's the bloodlines, you see.
No, I don't see. But congratulations, anyway. I suppose she'll be empress to your emperor.
I didn't want that either. But it seems, what shall I say, politically necessary. I can't say no. Not when the alternatives would be so much worse.
We could run away.
Hazel looked into Owen's eyes for the first time.
Leave this whole mess behind us. It would be just like the old times again, you and me running from the Empire. Nothing and no one to care about but ourselves.
It's tempting. There's a part of me that wants to do that very much. But I can't. It's duty, you see. I've always understood duty. In the end, there are things more important than our own happiness. And you never did say you loved me.
No, I never did.
They both waited a long time, but neither of them spoke. They sat together, drinking their drinks, and tried to see their way through the darkening future ahead of them.